Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to BT Centre. I'm Jerry McQuaid. I'm the CEO of BT's Enterprise division. And before we jump into the detail, can I just ask you to have a quick be aware of the forward-looking statement caution? Well done, and we'll move into the detail. This is the third of BT's business briefing. And we're obviously keen to give you a bit of insight into Enterprise, which was formed May last year when we brought together Wholesale division and the Business and Public Sector division. And what we're looking to do today is essentially, you know, we're very aware that this is a large, diverse business, and people sometimes struggle to really understand how the business is made up. So we want to try and give you better insight into BT Enterprise. We'll talk to you about how we view the B2B market. We'll talk about share. We'll talk about what the opportunities are and what the challenges are. But essentially, as I say, the key thing we want to try and do is to give you much greater insight into actually what is a very broad business does. So the agenda is going to take about an hour, an hour and 10 minutes, and then we'll have some time for Q&A. I will kick off by giving you a little bit more about shape and scope of the business, how we're organised, where the revenue streams come from, what the opportunities are, what the challenges are, and I'll set up where we are strategically. I'm then going to hand over to Chris Sims, who's our MD of Strategy, Marketing and Digital, and Chris will take you through the detail of those strategic priorities, how we set them up, how we will measure ourselves going forward as a business, really set out the landscape for our long-term vision of how we see BT Enterprise as being successful. And then we'll hand over to Damien Malpark, who's the CFO of BT Enterprise. Some of you will know Damien from previous roles. And he'll take us through some financial performance information, but also talk about what our progress in terms of our transformation plans, whether that's our organisational model, operating model, or our cost base. Then we'll stop for Q&A. So just a few things that I'd like you to leave with. I mean, really is what I'm trying to set up for the day is actually to get a better understanding of the business. There's some pretty simple things that have been in the sector for some time and really can't not address them. One is obviously that the key headwind we face is about legacy voice and lines and calls. But the business is so much more than that, and actually to be successful, it's not just about moving, you know, things from legacy voice to IP voice. It's a much more complicated mix. And what we're trying to paint for you today is some key underpinning strategies that matter for that. And for that, what we want to try and understand is actually just there's a number of things like, you know, where's the brand? What's the strength of the brand? How does it play in the market? What's the strength of our sales force? What's the strength of our channel model? What's the strength of our networks? Where are we in terms of product design and how does that play out in the market? So we'll talk about all of those things. But ultimately, we see a situation where we have a short to medium term challenge in terms of those key headwinds, and we have a long term strategy to deal with that. So we know what we've got to do in the short term, what we've got to do in the medium term, and we think we've got a winning strategy in the long term. So let me just talk a little bit about just 50,000 feet so that everybody understands the nature of Enterprise. So we are, as I say, we brought together on the 1st of May, so in terms of having, you know, meaningful financials. What we've done here is we've shown you financials for the 12 months up to our half year, so to September, 12 months to September 18-19. You'll see that we generated in that 12 months 6.5 billion of revenue, 2 billion of EBITDA, and 1.5 billion of normalised free cash flow. So 28% of revenue of the group, 27% of EBITDA, and 38% of the cash flow of the group. So really significant business. It's not just a significant business to BT, it's a significant business to UK PLC. It underpins most of the critical national infrastructure. We see in here we've got 1.2 million customers. We'll talk a little bit more about that share. But if you're not a customer, if your business is not a customer of BT's retail division and Enterprise, you're probably a customer of our Wholesale division through one of the 1,400 CPEs, communication providers, that we also serve. There's three core strengths, I think, to our business. It's been three core strengths for a long time. It's a brand, it's a reach, and it's about a network product. those are what the business was built on, and actually, as you'll see as we go through this, is what the business is going to be built on going forward. So we'll unpack that and give you a bit more detail to that. So let me, this slide is trying to do a number of things, but it's enterprise on a page. What it shows you is the markets that we serve, the organizational model you use to serve that, and it also shows you the revenue streams by each organizational unit. This is also how we present our financials to the market. So all of that's on a page. And let me start in the top right and just walk you through into the chart, give you a bit more insight into what happens in each of these divisions. So within wholesale is where we sell to other competitors, other communication providers. And there are probably three key parts to wholesale. The most important part is where we sell fixed products, so broadband, voice, Ethernet, and managed services to other communication providers. And that's the core of that. However, there are two other parts that people probably don't see as much. One is that we also, from wholesale, we sell to the mobile networks in the UK. And behind a large percentage of the mobile network base stations is a BT wholesale transmission line. And we provide the transmission, and quite often we're also providing managed services on top of that operation. The third area within wholesale is a media and broadcast business, largely run out of BT Tower, and someone's been there, you'll have seen this, you know, a very large, intricate network operation center there. From there, we manage the transmission services for about 500 broadcasters around the globe. We transmit about 16,000 hours of TV a day. We also within there, we do all of the UK's 3G and terrestrial traffic comes through there as well. So fairly significant operation, again, a very big managed service operation there. The fourth area within wholesale, which we in our financials we show separately, is the MVNO market. We've got a large share of the MVNO market. It's the two largest customers in there, well known, is Asda and Virgin Mobile. And then the third area, we used to be wholesale and ventures, then is the ventures operation. The ventures operation is really doing a couple of things. It's got two main operations. One is about providing non-core businesses in BT, and we brought this together 3 years ago because there was a lot of, in a sense, subscale businesses in BT terms, not necessarily for most other businesses, to make sure that they got focused, they got oxygen, had a chance to grow. And you've seen that the ventures portfolio actually is a portfolio that's in good growth. What's in there, as I say, is two things. One is there's a bunch of regulated businesses, so payphones, phonebook, and 999 services. 999 services we also wholesale. So our 999 services we operate for all of the other communication providers in the UK who have an obligation to provide 999. We pass that to us and we operate out of ventures. And also there's then a number of other businesses that actually support BT's business or the other small scale. So you get things like supply chain, you get fleet, and you get Redcare within there as well, which we operate for BT. We also operate for other sub parties. And we'll talk about some of those. So that was wholesale and ventures. It's just over a third of our revenue stream and a fairly diverse mix of businesses. If I come to the rest of the chart, it basically is the picture of how we organize currently our retail business. The retail business is probably worth looking at in two different ways. One is the SME business, which manages customers up to 100 employees. And I'm going to come back to talk about customer definition because it's one of the hard things when it comes to share. Now, the SME business, I say, up to 100 employees, the majority of those customers, and of course 99% of all businesses are in that segment, a lot of those customers actually see themselves as consumers. And increasingly we see the number of businesses being created as increasing, largely because of the gig economy. We're seeing lots of people who are very much, you know, soulless workers, see themselves as consumers. But within this area, we therefore see a lot of the businesses actually transacting in similar ways to consumer. And we'll talk a little bit about distribution later, but essentially they want to buy digitally, they want to buy in retail, they want to buy off the desk. At the top end of that, of course, we also have some field sales as well, which operates into the medium space. The other two areas, corporate and major and public sector, are largely addressed by field force selling. It's ad hoc pricing. It's less than market pricing. So anything from 100 up in terms of employee size, and obviously a large diversity there. I'll talk a little bit about products in a second. Also within major corporate and public sector is also the Republic of Ireland business, which we financially show separately. And within that, I'll just say a couple of words about Republic of Northern Ireland. That's largely a wholesale business and a major multinational corporate business. So we sell to multinationals based in Ireland and large companies, or we also wholesale. That's what's inside there. And we run that from our major and public sector business. The products that we sell within here, we could spend a lot of time talking about what products are, and there's variations that are quite complex, but essentially much of the need is the same. You know, what we see in most businesses, whether you're a SOHO or whether you're a large corporate, you are looking for mobile, you are looking for connectivity, you are looking for voice, you are looking for security. And increasingly, all the way through, we see for security coming up the customer needs priorities. What happens across all of these is all that's happening is as you go up the scale in terms of size, the complexity of the need and the scale of the need differentiates, and also the need for support in terms of managed service becomes more and more real. So what you see is higher bandwidth, more complex solutions, and more managed service at the top, but essentially very similar needs. And actually, when we survey customers and what their needs are, you see a lot of familiarity all the way through the whole of the base. It's worth saying a few things about brand, I think, actually, because one of the things I think is quite important about understanding the strength of the business, I know that most CEOs, and I know analysts are the same, they love a good spreadsheet, and we do run our business on numbers, but actually it's not just the product revenue that underpins the business. The brand is one of the most important foundations of the business. And we run the business in four brands. Chris will talk a little bit more about the detail of this, but let me just say on the right-hand side, BT Wholesale, essentially it's an organizational brand. We do sell using it, but actually we don't pass the brand on in terms of the products that we sell. So our communication providers do not on-sell a BT brand. They will on-sell a BT product, BT Wholesale brand, purely for wholesale, but we don't allow the brand BT to be used within the wholesale market. Within the B2B market, largely, most of our selling is done through field force. And you go into a customer, you have a BT business card, they know you're BT. So BT is our primary brand. And although we do use these other brands and we have good purpose for using the other brands. However, I wanted to say a little bit about the BT brand because probably it's the thing that surprised me most coming into BT was just how strong the BT brand is in this segment. Not all marketeers, so let me just explain this chart. I mean, one of the things in looking at the strength of your brand is typically you'll be interested in a number of criteria. The number one thing is the customer aware of my brand? Do you know what I do? And then would you consider me for selling? And then would you consider me first when you're looking for these services? What this chart tries to show is that for each of the segments across the customers we address, just how strong customers view the BT brand. So as high as 48% of a customer base, so in major corporate, would see BT as the place they are most likely to go to get telecom services. That's a phenomenal percentage and a phenomenal strength to have. And across the BT market, the B2B market, we see that strength as being completely pervasive. And the thing we see most is the reliability that people associate with the brand. One other thing I'd point out on this chart is the SME element, the low end of SME, those micro businesses where you see the dip in consideration there, that first purchase consideration is slightly lower, still very strong actually in a market as dynamic as ours. But what drives that is that within the micro business market, there's increasingly a subset of it who see price is the primary driver for purchase. You will see as a second or a third driver in all the other segments, value for money is a driver, but not price, and there's a difference. What you see at this bottom end is a subset of them who actually see price as the primary driver, and that's not something we want to drive the BT brand towards, but it is something we'd play with BlustNet. So that's where you see the difference there, and Chris will talk a little bit about how we're playing that. The other thing I wanted to talk about, because it's probably the most common question I get when I talk to analysts, is share. And unfortunately, the B2B market is, it's a perennial question, is share, how much share you have. And that problem you have of such a high proportion of businesses at the low end to see themselves as consumers actually makes it difficult to get exact positions. So what I'm trying to show you here is exactly how we approach share and how we approach our marketing. So there's around 4.9 million customers who are businesses in the UK. However, as I said, a large proportion of that 4.9, the vast majority are, I think it's 82% are in the 1 to 9 employee base. So that's the scale of what you see as micro businesses in there. And a large proportion of that see themselves as buying consumer. What we do not want to do is to then create a position where we are spending marketing money to compete with a consumer business. So how we look at it is we look at the VAT register. It's not an exact science. We look at VAT register businesses, and we see that and those listed companies as the addressable market that we want to go after. What you will find is we go after that, and we'll pick up some who are not VAT registered into our base. Consumer will pick up VAT register companies. But if you're looking at share and how we look at share, that's the metric we're looking at. So we're looking at that 2.7 as the addressable market. That's all driven by the low end of the market. The other thing that is worth saying is that how we address the top end of the market as BT. I know the GS have already done a business briefing, and so you'll be aware of their and how their go-to-market. But within the UK, there's obviously a lot of multinationals who are resided in the UK, a lot of multinationals who are resided elsewhere who have UK subsidiaries, sizable UK subsidiaries. So part of our market in the UK is addressed by the Global Services Division and what they have in there. So they would call, you know, they've talked about their 800 customers that they focus on. 256 of those customers are in the UK. And in terms of just making sure this adds up to the 2.7 number, that 256 has 16,000 subsidiaries associated with it. So that's the scale of what they address. We address the rest. So what that means is GS are dealing with, you know, the large finance institutions, pharmaceuticals, manufacturing, consultancies. So most of the people in the room, your business will probably address by GS. That's it. However, so we have 1.2 million customers, and I thought it would be useful just to talk about some of the shares around core products. So what you see on the right-hand side here is some of the core products. And what the data point here is, we're taking the half-year position in 18-19, the revenue streams for in the marketplace for that period. So it's a half-year period, revenue by product, and then looked at our share of revenue for each of these key products. And what you see is that, you know, as an incumbent business, we have a high share of fixed voice. And you can see a high part of that share is actually in the SME market. There won't be any surprise in that. That's the area where you'll see the biggest challenge as well in terms of the voice part, and we'll talk a bit more about that as we go on. IP voice, what this shows is IP voice and SIP. If you were looking just at IP, what this shows is about 8% share. IP on its own, we're probably about 13%. We were very slow to get to this market. We are seeing it as a major focus. We now have the product portfolio that covers the market for that. It's an area we will continue to drive going forward. However, that shows the way people quite often talk about it. They go, you've got a legacy voice issue, how are you moving it to IP voice? Definitely a real issue that we need to address and we do address. However, the other part of the market is just as important. And actually, we need to be just as and more successful in the other part of the market if we want to have a growth strategy. And what the other part of the market we're looking at here is mobility, broadband and networking, where we have high network shares, and for each of those products, also growth. Broadband being typically relatively flat, but we're starting to see growth there, and we'll talk about what's underpinning that as we go on. And also point out in the networking chart here, because we have such a high incidence of managed services that include networking connectivity and are packaged and priced as a whole, this does not include those elements of networking in the revenue stream, so there's a little bit more share in there as well, but difficult to pull out. However, so the core market is definitely changing. Everybody recognizes the dynamic in the industry of, you know, as people move to, you know, bigger data packages, they move to the cloud, they're moving to IoT, they're moving to convergence. Those are challenges that the industry is, you know, facing, and there are opportunities that we see. What this chart shows, however, is that everything changes, but nothing changes. The revenue stream over 4 years stays the same. Part of this I believe in, part of it I'm less convinced in. What we definitely see in the top half of this chart is that we need to move from legacy voice to IP voice. And we need to fill that hole with some ancillary products. And we'll talk about what those are. I think everybody can see that, and I think what we will show is that we can be successful in that. The part I'm less convinced by is the part at the bottom that says access and mobile are going to stay the same. That's not what we see. What we see is we've got growth there, and we think there's further growth. I think when people look at this, they think that, you know, things like SD-WAN is actually going to be a situation where everybody's going to use the internet as their backbone in terms of how they move traffic around. Again, not what we see. We see SD-WAN as opportunity, and we see convergence as opportunity. And actually what we think is actually we hope to grow all of the segments in here. But it's not just the market that's changing. You know, we can see that the demands on our customer base are changing quite significantly. So as they get demands from their businesses, their customers, they're passing those demands into how they need to change the operation of their business, and they're making those demands of us as servicing their needs. So what we're definitely seeing is that actually as people move to those dynamics of clouds and large data bundles and more and more thicker Ethernet services, they're asking more things of us. They're looking for reliability. That has always been a strength. They're looking for flexibility in how we deal with them. They're looking for innovation. They want themselves to be... One thing we see is that every customer we deal with, they're also a consumer. And actually, they have exactly the same expectations of us increasingly as they have as consumers. So they're looking for self-serve increasingly. They're looking for access to the data increasingly. Therefore, we need to move and support that. One thing that's very clear is that they want value for money. And, you know, we've got to be able to move to a situation where, in terms of being able to support them, we need to do two things. We need to be easy to do business with. And we need to be good delivering solutions and not products. It's very easy in this business because of the, you know, how we have to report to think about everything's a product. In truth, that's not the conversation we have with the customer. We have a conversation with the customer about their needs, and the needs are much more than just individual products. Now, for us to do that, we need to think about the experience that our customers are having. And for us, this has been a drive really over the last 3 or 4 years about looking at customer experience. And Chris will talk about some of the progress we've made. But we're not looking at this in terms of how a customer interacts once they've got service. It's not about provisioning or repair. It's about everything from when the customer speaks to a salesperson at the very front of the process, all the way to when a customer asks to be disconnected. We've got to treat them in a different way and treat them as if we believe in them and we trust them, and they can trust us to deliver what they ask. We'll focus more on that as we go. So essentially, I think that the market is needing what we have. We've got the best reach, we've got the best network, we've got the best products, convergence is coming, the IoT is already there. I think you'll see all of the dynamics that is actually driving the change for the customers, actually we're well placed to serve. And what we want to be able to do over the next stage of the presentation is actually take you through how we're doing that and what our strategy is. Now, the one thing before we jump into a handover to Chris and talk about strategic priorities we have, anybody who's attended any of our results presentations will know that actually this is the BT strategy. All that we say is actually, you know, fits into the strategy. It's very much about differentiated customer experiences. It's about an integrated network position. We see convergence as key, and we'll talk about what we've done here already. We're already seeing the proof points come through, and actually it's just as important that our operating model is changed, not just to drive cost, but actually to drive that experience that our customers and our staff actually experience. I'm going to stop there, hand over to Chris, who will take you through the priorities.
Thanks, Jared. Good afternoon. For those of you that I've not met, my name's Chris Sims, and I run the strategy, marketing, and digital team here in BT Enterprise. I'm actually going to spend about 30 minutes just taking you through some of our key priorities. And importantly, what you'll see is these priorities are a response to both the challenges and market trends that Jerry highlighted in his earlier presentation, but actually also to the opportunities. And we think there's a whole bunch of exciting stuff here. Naturally, our priorities dovetail against the BT strategy that Jerry had in his final slides, and I'll talk about them as such. The first priority is sitting in deliver differentiated customer experience and in how we're going to invest in integrated network leadership. I'll cover those two before handing over to Damien to talk about how we're going to be transforming our operating model. In BT, and certainly in the hundreds of people that are working on these initiatives, we're super excited about what we can do over the next few years. And I think it's important to say up front that the six priorities you see today are the things we're going to be investing in, they're the things we're going to be talking about, and actually when it comes to defining what we mean to be successful in the market, it's KPIs around these six areas that we're going to be measuring. And the reason we're doing that is that we genuinely believe in these areas we have a brilliant opportunity to drive sustainable growth and offset some of the impacts from the headwind that Jerry talked about earlier. So we'll move straight on into differentiated customer experience. And here we see two main areas where we believe there's opportunity for focus. The first is in how we maximize our reach into the market. And the second is about how we give our customers straightforward experiences when engaging with us. Like most organizations, we've got a number of ways in which we manage and interact with our customers. But probably the two where we've got the opportunity to drive the biggest difference are in our brand and in our channel. As Jerry said earlier, the BT brand is really, really well positioned for the enterprise market. And actually at a master brand level, all the metrics that Jerry quoted are absolutely true. We're in a brilliant, brilliant position. And actually, when you disaggregate and look at how that brand performs at a product level, the good news continues. And in fact, in most of the markets we're choosing to operate in, the BT brand is number one. However, there's a couple of areas where we see a really good opportunity for our other brands, namely EE and Plusnet. The first of these is in mobile, and the second is in the value seeker segment of the market. Now, I suspect most people in the room are familiar with EE from the consumer positioning around tech-savvy customers, and it's really, really is no surprise that some of that has filtered through into the B2B market. And what we see today is we've got a lot of traction, particularly in small business and corporate, by customers who want to buy a mobile solution with that heritage and with that tech-savvy positioning of EE. On the value seeker market, we see this as an increasingly important part of our overall proposition. And actually, if you look at how we could address those with BT and EE, it's kind of tough to do that when those two brands are positioned very much at the premium end of the market. And here, Plusnet gives us a really good opportunity to continue to increase our market share in that value seeker segment without diluting our other brands. It's probably fair to say that over the last period, we've been relatively proactive in how we do this. But there's a really good opportunity going forward to make sure that we're dialing up those activities and being slightly more aggressive in that market. Actually, when you look at the portfolio of brands as a whole, despite fantastic coverage across all of our markets, there still is a little bit of white space. And there's a certain proportion of our prospective base who today don't consider any of the BT brands. And as we move towards an IP and 5G world, there's a really unique opportunity tailor our marketing activities, not just to appeal to our existing customers, but actually trying to appeal to a new generation of B2B customers. So that's brand. On channel, it's fair to say we've got a hugely diverse channel, and that gives us a fantastic number of opportunities. Firstly, the UK geographically is a very diverse place, and our channels are able to reach the full geography of the UK. Secondly, we're able to service customers in the way they choose to be sold to, and we see huge differences between, for example, small business in public sector as to how they respond to certain sales techniques. And finally, by using sensible combinations of indirect channels and direct channels, we're able to further extend that reach into the market, but at the same time, at sensible cost of sale. Our direct channels are led by our field and desk work sales forces. Field, as Jerry said earlier, is ideally placed for the maps and public sector part of our market, and they sell bespoke contracts, particularly covering both managed and unmanaged services. Conversely, actually, our desk-based sales are much more suited to the volume products, things like BT lines and BT broadband, and we see a very high proportion of our sales of those products going through our desk-based sales teams, particularly in small business and the lower end of corporate. However, both those channels are expertly supported by our BT local businesses. That's a network of 34 independent businesses with about 1,200 people who are expert in selling BT-branded products and services directly into their local community. These organisations actually have got quite a lot of time and local knowledge of their area and can spend good quality time with their customer, and therefore that channel is really ideal at selling some of our more advanced solutions, particularly in the unified communication space. And we see a very high proportion of our sales in those products going through our local businesses. And finally, those channels are complemented by our indirect channels. And as I said earlier, they give us a lot of reach into the market that would otherwise be difficult to address. And by actually using them sensibly, we maintain a sensible cost of sale. And there's no better example of that than the work we do through a small number of indirect partners through EE Mobile. Now, the channel I haven't talked about is digital. And digital sales today represents a relatively modest part of our overall sales. But it's fair to say we're investing heavily in digital capabilities, and later in the year we'll be launching a bunch of products that have got digital sales really absolutely at their heart. So the second area is around driving straightforward customer experiences, and actually we've made pretty good progress over the last couple of years. Our benchmark here is NPS, so Net Promoter Score, and we get this through regular quarterly surveys with our customers, and on occasions actually surveying them after individual transactions. And we've seen quarter on quarter for the last 2 years a very marked improvement of our Net Promoter Score, showing our customers more than ever a value in our engagements with us. But despite the good progress of BT, what's absolutely clear is that UK Telecoms does not set a particularly high benchmark. And actually, BT doesn't just have an opportunity to lead our market, we have an opportunity to lead the industry into delivering a set of customer experiences that bring us up to the standards we expect of other B2B service provision. There's two main areas we're focusing on to do this. The first is robust, digitized customer experiences, and the second are a bunch of new innovative service propositions that we're putting into the market. So starting with robust, digitized customer experiences, we're really focusing on three main areas: our people, our tools, and our processes. With people, we've invested heavily in training with a training course called Great Conversations, which has driven a lot of customer engagement. We've also invested in continuous improvement, and we have now rolled out continuous improvement into every single service centre in the UK. And through a massive cultural transformation programme in conjunction with an organisation through Blue Sky, we've really managed to change the way our customers behave, our agents behave, and their attitude in work. And this has driven a number of awards, 3 awards for employee engagement and 4 awards in terms of customer service. On tools, we've really focused around Medallia, which is the tool we use to get in the moment customer feedback. And unlike other organizations, if we see a customer has fed back that an experience is not what we would expect, we're straight on the phone to them, normally within 4 hours, to try and understand what the issue was and to rectify the situation. And finally, and probably most importantly, we have a huge opportunity around delivering changes to our process. Across major customer journeys, across the whole of BT and within enterprise, we're re-engineering, we're reworking, we're automating, and we're digitizing our customer journeys to make sure we're delivering them right first time for our customers. And actually a really great example of this and an early win for us is the work we've been doing for our wholesale customers on Ethernet. And you've got to remember, for our wholesale customers, they're ordering Ethernet from us day in, day out to support their own retail customers. We've been working to digitize and automate that journey, which has reduced the overall order time from around 35 to 40 minutes to just 10 minutes. The net satisfaction of that order journey alone has increased by over 85 points over the last couple of years. And that's not just great for our customers, reducing their own time and effort, but it's also great for BT, reducing our cost to work, cost to serve, making our organisation more simple, and actually ultimately reducing our overhead. The second area is actually around predictive analytics and the use of data. We have access to, through our network, a whole bunch of data that today we use to try and estimate faults before they've even occurred. A really great example of that is actually in our copper broadband base, where proactive care and predictive analytics has improved the service of over 200,000 customers, massively reducing the number of fault calls into our service centres. Again, this has been brilliant for the customer and it keeps it always connected, but just in terms of our bottom line, the ability to save 2,500 calls a week, that's the equivalent of over 50 people, has not just created a better cost base for us to work from, but has meant those agents can actually focus on other services for our customer. It's a great example of using the power of data to focus on customer experience. A second example is actually how we're making that data available to customers through an award-winning tool we've got called BT Bill Analytics. Today, more than ever, we're giving customers complete transparency of their cost base with us, enabling them to control their spend, and I think quite crucially, understand what parts of their own organisation are generating that spend. For us, it gives a very tangible proof point of why we believe our relationship with those customers is valuable, and we see that will increase our partnership and ultimately drive sales in the longer term. Now, these are the things we're doing today. I think it's fair to say that over the next year, we've got some super exciting customer service propositions that we're going to be putting into the market. So that's on differentiated customer experience. The second area of focus is actually in integrated network leadership. And there's three parts here where we think there's a real opportunity to drive BT's performance. The first is leading the industry migration to IP. The second is the level of innovation that we're putting into converged network products and a few new revenue streams. And the third is the utility we can drive from probably our best asset, which is our 4G and in future 5G network. For those of you that don't know, in 2025, the PSTN telephone network will be switched off. And that means anyone who's using legacy telephony equipment, which probably includes most of us at home, will have to migrate to new IP services. And this creates an enormous opportunity for the industry. For BT, just to give a sense of scale, we've got 1.9 million lines, split between over 500,000 customers that will be migrating from traditional PSTN to IP services during this time. And actually, as an organization, it's really pleasing to see how we've scaled up both our tools and our people to actually manage that in a way that doesn't impact the customer experience of our customers. However, a really big part of any migration is to have a set of products on which our customers can land. And here, BT has got a unique opportunity in the market. We've got a number of high-profile partnerships with companies such as Cisco, Avaya, BroadSoft, that enable us to deliver probably the UK's most comprehensive set of IP products, covering everything from cloud-based unified communications, cloud-based contact centers, and the ability to completely remove the Office PBX, the Office Exchange equipment, putting that also in the cloud. Today, we've got over 480,000 UC seats on our base, which makes us comfortably the market leader. And actually looking at how we've migrated the customers, the really great news is it's not just about giving them access to a new feature-rich set of products. During that migration, we've been able to drive ARPU by coupling voice with a number of other products, including access and security. I said at the start this was an opportunity for the industry, and absolutely the role BT's playing in driving that is through our white label wholesale unified communication solution. So it's not just our base that will benefit from this technology. The industry as a whole will benefit from market-leading IP solutions for their customers. The second area of focus is in convergence. And BT has a really, really unique opportunity to drive a set of converged products that will not just capture existing markets, but open up completely new markets for BT. And I'm just going to focus on a few examples here. So the first is 4G Assure, which is our combined fixed network and mobile network product. What's clear is that customers enjoy the assurance they get that if their broadband goes down, the solution will fall over onto the 4G network. And what's also clear is they're prepared to pay for that assurance. However, there's a couple of other features of this product that I find particularly cool. The first is rapid installation. Unlike most broadband services, with 4G Assure, within 48 hours of ordering the product, it will be sat in your office connecting your people. No one else is able to deliver such a quick turnaround time, and that's because it can use 4G while waiting for the fixed line part to be installed. And the second is proactive support. If your fixed line broadband goes down, we know about it because we're still connected through 4G. And we're able to do troubleshooting and even dispatch engineers to fix the problem, sometimes even before the customers even notice. These are really fantastic benefits of having a hybrid solution providing broadband to our customers. We launched the product around April last year. It's sold extremely well. We've sold 60,000 units. And I think what's actually much more importantly is we actually sell this only on our premium price bands. And we've seen the mix onto premium products double as a direct result of this solution. And that's driven an £8 increase in ARPU. And this is important because this is a market that BT has actually created. This hybrid market is something BT's created, and our customers absolutely love this product. Another really good example is BT OnePhone. So what BT OnePhone does is it means customers who want the functionality of an office phone system but actually want to be fundamentally mobile-led can remove their PBX and actually replicate all that functionality in the cloud off a bunch of mobile phones. The solution is super flexible, allowing any organization from 2 seats all the way up to 10,000 seats to benefit from the solution. And again, that level of convergence, taking features from PBX, combining them with features from mobile, has enabled us to drive a significantly higher ARPU than through mobile alone. In addition, it attracts significantly longer contract lengths as well, and the tight integration of features reduces our cost to serve. Again, it's a brilliant example of convergence, this time between PBX and unified communication and mobile. However, the jewel in our convergence crown is surely going to be the solutions BT can provide around software-defined wide area networking, or SD-WAN, as we call it. And here we have a really, really unique opportunity. Now, SD-WAN is a slightly nebulous concept, so I'm going to try and explain it very quickly. It's very simply the capability to decouple network access from network management. And what that means is organizations such as ourselves are able to combine a number of different access methodologies into a number of different sites and manage them all from a single point. Now, for BT, this stuff is absolute gold dust. And the reason it's gold dust is because we have some of the UK's best mobility assets and network assets, and SD-WAN allows us to combine them. On the network side, obviously we have fantastic fixed assets. Jerry talked about internet earlier, but actually we see most of the volume going on to things like Ethernet, MPLS, and broadband. Coupled with that, we obviously have the best mobile assets in terms of 4G and 5G. Elsewhere in the portfolio, we have a fantastic set of workforce mobility solutions covering collaboration, device management, device security, unified communication, and many, many more. What SD-WAN enables us to do is to build a package where you can configure both your network asset from a choice of network access technology and use it to control access to your mobility solution, again, from that single interface. It really is converging those two worlds. But it doesn't just stop there. Through our partnership with Cisco, we're deploying equipment into a customer premises that also allows us to operate LAN-based networking. So it allows them to offer things such as guest Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi for their own employees, LAN solutions, access control. And these are markets that traditionally have been quite hard for BT to get into. But with SD-WAN, through that single interface, we can control access, mobility solutions, and now the office LAN solution as well. And to wrap it all off, we're able to provide it under a single managed service with a single quote, with a single bill, and a single customer service environment, truly converging many, many different parts of the BT portfolio into a single solution. Outside the convergence, there's three areas where I think there's an opportunity to really drive material revenue going forward. The first of those, Jerry touched on very lightly earlier, and that's IoT. And I think it's clear, actually, if you look at some of the analyst reports, that the market for IoT has probably moved slower than we were expecting a few years ago. However, during that time, BT has quietly and confidently been building capability in this space. And actually, we see today with the engagements with customers and in responses to tenders, that IoT is a much more prevalent conversation than we've seen in previous years. For BT, IoT also presents a fantastic opportunity to change the way we work, using IoT technologies to improve our operations. However, it's the ability to take that expertise and use it to develop products which we can sell in the market, which personally I find the most exciting. And we've had no better example of this than the work we've done within our with supply chain for our final mile solution. This is an IoT-enabled locker system that we designed and developed with our OpenReach engineers in mind. However, more recently, we've sold that as a managed service to a number of different utility providers. And actually, behind the scenes, this solution is powering the majority or a large proportion of the UK smart meter rollout. A really great example of us taking internal expertise and applying it to an external solution. For BT, actually, our journey with IoT started around 2014 with a number of smart city deployments in Milton Keynes and in Manchester. More recently, we've delivered a low-power network to London. And actually, outside of the public sector, in private sector, we've got a number of engagements that loosely break around a number of solutions we've got that allow our customers to track their assets and know what state they're in. And clearly for BT, with a ubiquitous network across the 4G and a number of different device management and data capabilities, that absolutely plays to our sweet spot. However, we can't just look at the solutions BT provides. We're really proud to be able to support other organizations to deliver IoT solutions on our network. And today, we have over 5 million IoT devices connected to our mobile network. And that's either delivered directly or through partnerships we have with our indirect channel partners. And as we move towards 5G, we'll start to see the world's first cellular standard that's designed with IoT in mind. And the offshoot of that is we'll be able to support devices that are smaller, have longer battery lives, are more robust, and much more crucially, an awful lot cheaper. And that will open a whole load of use cases that are unreachable today. So it's a super bright future in 5G, and important in IoT, and importantly, it dovetails precisely into the future of 5G as well. The second area where we see growth is in security. And again, it's driven by one of the key market trends, which is the move to cloud. And whilst cloud has given our customers the opportunity to simplify their own operations, it's also making them nervous. People realize it's not enough anymore just to secure their IT environment at the front door of the office. Organizations today work over a number of sites, number of distributed networks, and using hyperscaler solutions are often using business applications and have data hosted in the cloud, often outside the UK. To compound this, we see there's actually a scarcity of skills in the market, and organizations that do know what they want to do even struggle to recruit enough people to support their own ambitions. And this is where BT comes in. In a market that's growing 8%, we have an unrivaled opportunity in the UK to take the same skills that we use to protect our own networks and turn those into managed services to support our customers. And for me, probably my favourite example of this is the work we're doing with the UK's 43 police forces to take the expertise that we have in incident, security incident and event management globally and turn those onto the local police network. Now, obviously that gives them huge assurance that their data is safe, and obviously it's pretty critical data being the police force. But actually, it's also enabled a few other things. It's enabled them to undergo quite a rigorous IT transformation, moving some of their assets to the cloud, which has saved them money, which not only gives us a really valuable use case, but also a valuable security contract with the police force. The second area, actually, is more in the small business space. And, of course, security isn't just of concern to our large customers. However, what we've done on the other side of our base is make security much more accessible. Today, again with Meraki, we're working with the solutions they've done to build security directly into the customer, the equipment that we install into the customer premise. And this has removed the need for us to install separate firewalls, etc. Today, again using the same interface you see for SD-WAN, we can activate security firewalls, malware, filtering, and a whole bunch of other services for the customer using the equipment already installed within their premise. As a result, the attach rate of security has leapt from 2 or 3% to almost 1 in 4 of our entire customers, and that's just the point of sale. Actually, as we manage the life cycle of the customer, there's a huge opportunity to drive security even further. Again, another great example of what happens when you converge services together. And finally, we have one of our hidden gems, and in many ways, one of our biggest opportunities, which is around managed services. It's clear that despite the opportunities that things such as SD-WAN present to simplify operations, running IT and running network is still a fairly complicated business. And what we see from most of our customers is they actually prefer to focus on their core business, attacking their core markets. And this is where BT comes in. Whether it's anything as relatively straightforward as IT desktop support, through to things that are really quite ingrained and complex, such as entirely new WAN networks, IP migration. We have a team of over 3,000 dedicated professionals who will work with customers to manage their IT and their network on their behalf. And actually what's most impressive is the way we've done this, because we have done this through producing a set of scalable, reproducible solutions that not only guarantee the experience of the customer, but mean that we're actually keeping our margins from the product at a sensible level. As you expect, we manage a lot of public sector work through this managed services, and as a result, accreditation is vital, and the whole area works under an ITIL framework. And probably the most physical manifestation of this, as Jerry alluded to earlier, are our network operations centres, which provide the focal point for the managed service itself and are really incredibly sophisticated, giving insight not just at a network level, but often down to the individual users of the service. And they also play a valuable part of the sales methodology too. So we're super excited and super proud about the role of managed services within our portfolio. The team today supports some of the UK's best household names, focusing on removing the burden of IT and network managing from them and allowing them to concentrate on their core business. So before I finish, I'm just going to talk about our fifth priority, which is driving value from our mobile assets. And it's also quite hard to talk about future product portfolio without talking about 5G. What's clear today is we have comfortably the UK's best 4G network. And that's not just BT saying that. That's independently validated by RootMetrics. Geographically, it covers 91% of the population. And in fact, there's no better proof point of the quality of our network than the fact that in 2015, we were awarded the government contract to run the next generation of emergency services network. And that contract wasn't just given to us on the basis of us being great at doing IT transformation. It was given to us because we had an absolute commitment not just to deliver the best 4G network for our urban areas, but to take that network quality and drive it into our rural areas as well. And now this year, we've got an opportunity to take that great 4G network and add in a little bit of 5G magic. And for our customers, what that's going to mean is we'll be focusing on mobile devices where they're going to get greater access and greater speed. And our conversations with customers today show that they understand this will be a premium product, and therefore we expect to charge a premium price. However, as we go forward, we're going to make sure our network, both the radio layer and the core network layer, are up to date with the latest standards, offering a whole host of new opportunities around things such as fixed wireless access, allowing our customers to get connected quickly wherever they are, and actually moving on from there, opening a whole load of IoT use cases, allowing us to use 5G to support the operations of our customers in the longer term. So I hope over the last 30 minutes you've seen some examples of how we're taking our ambition into action. Really, we're focusing on our key assets, our best fixed and mobile network, our fantastic reach and our fantastic distribution network, the three great brands we have, and the fact that we believe that BT is expertly positioned to capitalize on some of the trends we've seen in the market, especially those in convergence, security, IoT, and managed services. As I said at the start, there's six priorities. I've covered the first five. So to take us through the sixth priority of transforming our operational business and to talk a little bit about the shape of our market, I'm going to hand us over to Damien.
Thanks, Chris. Afternoon, everyone. So I really want to cover three things. So firstly, I just want to delve a little bit more into our financials, particularly looking at our revenues and our costs. I'll spend a little bit of time talking about some of the challenges we've got, some of the opportunities we have as well. And then, as Chris mentioned, just focus a bit on that sixth priority, which is transforming our operating model, or really how we operate on a day-to-day basis. So in terms of our financials, $6.5 billion revenue, just over $2 billion of EBITDA, about $1.5 billion of free cash flow. And in terms of how our business has been trending, if I just take your attention to the chart or the graph in the bottom right-hand corner of the slide. So this shows our financial performance in terms of revenue and EBITDA over the last seven quarters. The purple line is our revenue, year-on-year change there, and the columns are our EBITDA. If you look back at 17-18, revenue was declining about 4-5% year-on-year, but our EBITDA was declining about 10% on average over that period. And really what that reflected was a fair amount of that revenue decline was the public sector headwinds that we've spoken about before, six major contracts, and the impact on that had quite a big impact on our profitability in that year. Now, if we look to how we performed so far in 18-19, the revenue mix has actually shifted a little bit. So it's still declining about 5% year-on-year. It's actually seen a bit of a pickup in the rate of decline of traditional voice calls and lines. But what we've also done is taken a proactive decision to move away from selling low-margin kits where it doesn't drive any flow-through or pull-through revenue. And obviously, less revenue there doesn't have as much of an impact in terms of our bottom line. And the other thing we've done is we've driven cost transformation faster as well. So whilst revenue is still declining about 5% year-on-year, at the moment, the mix has shifted a bit. We're focusing more on cost transformation, and that's just helping us to maintain that EBITDA decline more in the 3% range in terms of what we've seen so far. In terms of our CapEx, we spend about half a billion a year. You know, what do we typically spend it on? Some of that is customer-specific CapEx when we win a contract. Quite a lot of it is around system development, IT, particularly some of the new products we're developing or the front-end customer portals. But within that as well, within the CapEx number as well, there's our share of the BT core network costs. And I think this is quite an important point, actually, because one of the benefits of being part of the wider BT is that we benefit from having access to a good quality core network, a secure network, and that cost is spread over the entirety of BT. And I think versus maybe some of our smaller competitors, that does give us a bit of a service cost and product advantage. So overall, we are a relatively capex-like business, free cash flow margins in the 24% range, And as Jerry showed at the outset, we contribute close to 40% of the overall group cash flow. So if we look at our revenue in a bit more detail, about 40% of our revenue comes from fixed. And within that, 20% of the total is from fixed voice. And this is the area that is declining the most. And that's very much a market effect, and I'll show that shortly. About 8% of our revenue comes from fixed broadband. And we're seeing two different things here. On the one hand, we've got a reasonably high share of the fixed broadband market. And our customer base is declining a little bit at the moment. Now, clearly, we're not satisfied with that. We want to improve that. But in the meantime, offsetting that, we're seeing a pretty good ARPU growth from things like the move from copper to fiber, but also products like 4G Assure, which Chris mentioned earlier. In terms of WAN and Ethernet, so wide area networks, Ethernet, we're seeing in customers and corporations greater demand for data circuits, high capacity secure circuits, so we're seeing a growth in that area. If we look at the mobile side of our business, it's about 20% of our revenue, and most of that is coming from the retail side, with 3% from the wholesale side. Again, a competitive market, but we're seeing relatively steady growth across mobile at the moment. And about a sixth of our business comes from managed services, which Chris talked about earlier. Again, this is a really important area for us, and one which we would see as a big differentiator for us versus the competition. And then finally, you've got the standalone businesses. You've got the Republic of Ireland, which is 6% of our business. And you've got the ventures, 12 fairly standalone businesses, which make up about 9% of our revenue. And both the Republic of Ireland and ventures are important sources of growth for us. So hopefully, in terms of the financial disclosures that we give you every quarter, a lot of the KPIs, I think, hopefully help you in terms of understanding the revenue dynamics. The managed services one is one where we're looking at whether there's another way, maybe in terms of the order intake, that we can basically help you understand that a bit better. But hopefully the other volumetrics we report do give you good insight in terms of the dynamics of our business in terms of revenue. If we now look at our cost base, operating costs, about 4.3 billion. And the pie chart there shows the main buckets of our costs, broadly split a third, a third, a third. So a third of our costs are internal costs, so the lion's share there is going to be Openreach costs, we buy access from them, but also our technology unit within BT, we procure services from them. The red one at the bottom is our external suppliers, so again around a third, and to put that in context, it's over £1 billion that we spend with third parties every year. You know, that could be the likes of Cisco, Avaya, BroadSoft. We have third-party suppliers within our supply chain business, within our fleet business. And I'll talk shortly about what we're doing to manage that cost base. And then just over 25% are people-related costs. We've got 13,000 people in the business. And if you look in terms of how our costs have evolved, operating costs, as the top chart there shows, have declined about 6% in the first 9 months of the year, so slightly outpacing our revenue decline. And actually, if you look at our total headcount, including agency and support costs, we've reduced our headcount by about 5% since we formed Enterprise back in May last year. That gives you a kind of snapshot of our business in terms of revenue and cost. If you now look at the kind of dynamics of our business, what this chart here shows is our EBITDA walk from Q3 a year ago to the Q3 EBITDA that we reported a couple of months ago. And there's one thing that clearly stands out in it, and that is the decline that you see in fixed voice. And really that is a market-driven effect. And the two charts above it come from Ofcom. This is Ofcom data. The one on the left shows the total number of B2B lines in the UK, business-to-business lines in the UK. The chart on the right shows B2B call volumes. And the red lines that you can see on there are the year-on-year change in those metrics. And so what you can see quite clearly is that both of them are declining. What you can also see is that red line has declined at a faster rate than it was a couple of years ago. The rate of decline has accelerated. So clearly we're not immune to that, and that is one of the big, if not the single biggest headwind that we face as a business today, as you can see in the chart. Now, wholesale networking is also declining. We have some legacy products there which are moving to products such as Ethernet. But much of our business is growing, whether it's retail networking, broadband profit, MVNO, mobile, IP managed services, or SG&A, because we're taking costs now. We face one single big headwind, and that's voice. Large parts of our business are growing. And the challenge that we have is that where it's traditional voice is migrating to things like mobile and IP, these green blocks here, at the moment they're not offsetting it. And the challenge we have is to just shift the dynamics a little bit. So what are the things we're going to do to try and shift those dynamics? Well, firstly, it's about doing a better job of migrating from traditional to voice over IP. Now, as Jerry mentioned, we probably got off to a bit of a slow start on that. We've now developed products, and we're going to continue to develop products, and you'll see that over the next 6 and 12 months. We need to just readdress that balance a bit. The more voice over IP we sell, we get pull-through revenue in terms of networking and broadband. If you look at mobile, we've got about a 30% mobile market share in what, frankly, is broadly a three-player market. We've got the best network. Yeah, at 30% market share, that is clearly lower than we would aspire to. Managed services, profit is growing, but the revenues are declining at the moment for some mix and legacy reasons. Yeah, we want to take that back to growth. And then on top of that, moving into the new areas, IoT, cloud, SD-WAN, and security to supplement and drive growth over and above that. But to do all of that successfully, we do need to change how we operate as a business. And that really takes me on to the sixth priority that we've got. Again, transforming our operating model as part of the wider BT strategy. And for us, that is about simplifying our operations and optimizing sales. So what does that mean? When we formed Enterprise, we took the opportunity to have a proper look at how we were structured to see if we could structure it better. And what we found is that we had quite a siloed business. So we had a wholesale business, we had the retail channels. And what we found is that there was a lot of activity in each of the channels that was being duplicated. And in fact, within wholesale, we were doing product development very similar to what we were doing on the retail side, but it was duplicated and it was slightly different. So by bringing Enterprise together, there was a great opportunity for us to really simplify the business. And more importantly, take some of those, I guess, support functions around product development, the commercial plan, the strategy plan, take them out of each of the channels and centralize them into centers of excellence. That allows the sales channels to really focus on what they do well, which is selling, and it allows us to build things once rather than multiple times, build them quickly, sell them multiple times. Similarly, if you look at our service operations, in wholesale service, we have about 1,000 people. We have about 7,000 people in customer service on the retail side. Again, bringing those together, we'll find and are finding efficiencies from doing so. Clearly, we need to keep some segregation places between wholesale and retail, but there are significant synergies and benefits to be had even in that area from bringing things together. One project that BT is working on more widely and which we are very much part of is around clearer accountabilities and faster decision making. Sometimes we hold ourselves back by people not being 100% clear on what they are accountable for, and sometimes they don't know whether they've got the authority to go ahead and do it. So this is a big program for us in particular. We are being very focused on making sure people fully understand what they have to do, have the authority to do it, to make us much more fleet of foot in the market, more responsive to the market as well. And a good example of that is the work we're doing on what is called the lead to cash process. So the lead to cash process is the process from where a salesperson might identify a lead through to getting the order from that customer, through to delivering it, through to billing and getting the cash. So it's quite a long process. We're running a lot of projects looking at this in a lot of detail and breaking it down to see how we can do it much better and much faster. To give you one example on IP Connect, within a few weeks we've identified that there's scope to halve that entire cycle in two effectively. Now, what does that mean? That means, one, we get the revenue and the cash in sooner, but probably more importantly, we provide our customer with a much better experience. And if you look at our costs, as I mentioned, third-party costs, over $1 billion a year, a few things we're doing there. You know, firstly, I do think when we sign on a supplier, our procurement team do a pretty good job of driving savings at that point. But when it moves into in-life, I don't think we're quite as good at managing that, or haven't been in the past, managing that customer or that supplier in-life. So we've got a team now who are going to be focused very much on that in-life supplier management, making sure we get the best value for money from them. And similarly, you know, as a division, we have 5,500 suppliers. That's too much. So we're going to reduce the number of suppliers we use, and that will allow us to focus on the priority ones and, again, make sure we're getting best value for money. And the final thing about transforming our operating model is systems and processes. We still have too many systems. Our processes can be quite clunky. We need to invest to really simplify those things. Again, ultimately, that means a better customer experience, but it also means we probably need fewer people to support those systems and processes today. We'll be able to take costs out of the business that way. So really, to sum up, yeah, as a unit, we face one major headwind, which is the decline in voice, but we recognize that. It's time-constrained, it's market-driven. That will unravel at some point. In the meantime, we have a number of levers that we're focused on to drive top-line growth. We have a number of levers in terms of cost reduction. Our ambition, therefore, remains to take this business back to growth. With that, I'll hand over to Jerry.
Thank you, Damien. So I said at the start, I was really keen. Primary goal was to get you to understand the business. Hopefully they give you, and I realized that actually the scale of it and the diversity of it means that we didn't cover everything. So, but hopefully that gives you a flavor of the market, how we see the market we operate in, and what we see as the opportunities going forward. I think Damien's chart in slide 34 for me encapsulates the business in a page, in a sense, and it's also encapsulates in a way a picture of our strategy. Now, the business is working well, but it's facing a very significant headwind, and that headwind is the declining in voice. But it's a time-limited decline, and our strategy is a five-year strategy. So what I'm trying to show you here is actually we've got a plan that actually addresses where the market is today, what we need to do to address those headwinds today, what we need to do to build those core revenues and those ancillary revenues as we go forward into the next 5 years. And actually, I think that it's very easy to look at it as that slide and just think of it as product, but as I said at the start, if we don't get the basics right underpinning that, actually we will fail. But if we get the basics right, I'm absolutely convinced that actually we will build in a leadership position and have an even more differentiated position. I'm absolutely convinced that the brand strength is something that we need to build on. I think we've got a fantastic platform. The networks are unparalleled. And our reach in terms of our sales force and our distribution model is, again, market leading. We also see that convergence is real. It's already happening. We've got great proof points. And we see the value where we offer convergence in the market. And I also see that, actually, although IoT and security and cloud have been a bit nascent, actually, again, they're moving. Customers are talking about them. They're very high up in their priorities. And actually, they're only further upside. So I believe that not only do we have the strategy, we have the assets to underpin what we believe is an opportunity for us to grow the market in spite of those short-term headwinds. We'll stop there and we will stop for questions. We will also have people on a WebEx who will have the opportunity to ask questions. Can I?
Ladies and gentlemen, just to advise, if you wish to ask a question, please key star 1 on your telephone. If you want to withdraw your question, simply key star 2. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you will be advised when to ask your question. So just to advise, star 1 on your telephone.
Two questions, please. Firstly, I just want to ask about Openreach and what you think about network overbuilders to Openreach. If an overbuilder provided better connectivity to a business part, kind of what's your willingness to consider another network to service your customer? And then secondly, just on the blurring between kind of SME and consumer, I wanted to ask about kind of back book and front book pricing. Obviously, Ofcom's current review is focused on the consumer market, but will you commit to mirroring any changes in pricing behaviour from that review to your SME customers?
Okay. I think I'll take those both, actually. On Openreach, most of our business, the vast majority of our business comes from we push through Openreach today. No one offers us the reach and quality that we get from there. However, today, where we need to, if we find that we need to go to an alternative supplier for circuit, we will do that, and we do that. And that would be our principle going forward. But in truth, I can't see a situation emerging as we look at it today where we have a necessity to do that. But we will keep our options open. On the second question, we're very close to this, actually, looking at, in terms of the Ofcom position. We don't think it applies to us at the moment, but we will constantly keep an eye on that and apply it as necessary.
Thanks. Michael Bishop from Goldman Sachs. Just two questions, please. One was picking up on, I think it was the slide that Damien had, where you cited that in the broadband market you were losing share to competitors. Just be interesting to get your insight into what the dynamics are there, why you're losing some share. And then secondly, clearly the fixed voice headwind falls away at some point. Do you think we're likely to see very material declines for the next couple of years and then a tapering into the 2025 All IP migration, or do you think it'll be a more linear relationship? And if I could push my luck and ask what the red block is in absolute, so EBITDA as well.
Okay, I'll take the fixed voice, then I'll ask Mike Tomlinson, who runs this new business, to talk about broadband, and I'll ask Damien if he knows what the red block was that we're referring to. Fixed voice. Just repeat the question for me again. Just the fixed voice. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think Damien's slide shows you the dynamic there of the fixed voice is increasing. The utility of voice is diminishing. I think Damien suggested, where it's going. We know that there is a reducing utility for voice. It's just not people are not using it, or it's going to mobile, or it's going to IT. So in terms of the voice, it's definitely increasing. How we can model that going forward, whether as we get closer to 2025, it increases further, or pricing increasing drives it faster. I think what we've seen previously, that there's always a long tail when we've taken products out. But the position at the moment is definitely increasing faster. And to be honest, it's always been difficult to call, but I think that general trend of movement will be real, and I think it's why we want to make sure that we have the product sets that pick up any of the transfer. Mike, do you want to just cover the...
Mike Thomas from SME, just briefly on the market share loss on broadband. It's a volume share loss, but we've actually seen a value increase, and that was deliberate because about 3 years ago, when we looked at the space, we decided if we tried to compete with everyone, especially in the deal seeker space, which is about 30% of the market, I think Jerry mentioned that earlier, we just dilute the whole base down. We take the brand to a place where we didn't really want to take it. So we took the opposite view, and we decided in the top third of the market, the premium broadband space, we were going to own it, to be frank. And we do own it, and that's when we started to develop 4G Assure as the primary vehicle to own that space. Now, going forward, we've realised that maybe we were slightly slow out of the blocks in using our Plusnet brand to defend aggressively in that deal seeker space. And that's why it's now quite a prominent part of our broadband strategy.
Thank you, Mike. Can you
remember this? Yeah, I'll tell you what the size of the red block is. surprise, otherwise I would have put the number up there. But actually, just to kind of help you a little bit on that, so you know, we do split out our revenue in terms of different dynamics between lines and calls, and it's really traditional lines and calls that's in there. And you can probably have a reasonable guess of what our margins are. Calls are generally high margin than lines. You know, there aren't huge number of incremental costs on calls, so pretty high margin stuff. Lines, obviously, you've got the open reach cost, but the margins aren't anywhere near as high in terms of calls. I think from that, you can probably take a view on what you think the revenue will do and have probably a reasonable estimate of what the flow through is for the profit.
Just
wait
for the thank you.
Alexander Harold from Oldham. Are you concerned? You outlined the strategy regarding SMEs and trying to avoid competing at the bottom on price. But are you concerned that there might not be room for more for improvement in the small business, micro business sector? Because we don't usually see it as a positive if a company is serving lots of small businesses out of its retail as retail customers.
I'm not sure I fully understood the question actually.
We've heard that there are a lot of SMEs who are being served as retail customers on retail tariffs, etc. And we've heard that this was a decision to avoid targeting the so-called deal seekers. In most topics of my experience, it's not considered to be a positive to be serving SMEs as consumer with consumer products. We don't think there is more scope to improve the PlusNet offer, for example.
I think you've got to not look at the SME market as something that's homogenous. And I think it's really important when you look at the SME market, you see the diversity in it. For us, we're looking in, some businesses will look at that up to 250 employees. We look at it up to 100. And even within that, there's a big difference between how people buy within that, you know, one employee to 100 employees. So as I said at the start, and I think it's a really important part, a lot of people who are SMEs, especially SOHOs or micro businesses, they essentially see themselves as consumers. And you can spend a lot of money to try to get them to get a small incremental tariff in terms of putting them onto a business tariff. But you will pick them up in terms of, you know, targeted business advertising. So when we do our 4G Assure advertising, we will pick up some of those customers. But what we wouldn't do is spend consumer-like money to target those same customers. So it's a good cost-effective model to use a consumer business spend to pick up those customers, and to use our business spend that actually will pull some of them through, but actually it's a very targeted way to make sure that you get a good economy of scale for your advertising. We're pretty comfortable with that.
Hi, it's Polo Tang from UBS. I just have three quick questions. The first one is about the overlap with global services, because you highlighted that there were potentially a number of customers in terms of overlap. But does it actually make sense to combine global services and enterprise, or are there any benefits from actually keeping them separate? Second question is really just about the cyclicality of the business. How cyclical do you think the business is as it stands today? And have you seen any impact in terms of Brexit with corporates or businesses changing their behavior? And the third question is just a quick one in terms of who do you see as your main competitors in the UK? Is it TalkTalk? Is it Vodafone? Is it someone else?
Okay. Let me try and take those. Overlap with GX. I don't actually. I think where we are, what we do need to do with GS, and we do very well, is where we have overlap in terms of products and capabilities within the core of the business. We make sure that, as Damien is saying, we build things once and we use them many times. That's as true with the overlap with GS as it is with what we do within the segments of the business. So I utilize, GS was the lead in terms of taking security to market in BT. I utilize that capability in how we go to market. Their customer base buy differently from our customers. So they expect to be able to be served across the globe, and that's the differentiation. So it's important that you are put the customer at the heart of how you sell to them and how you serve them. So whilst behind the covers, yeah, we are absolutely making sure we get the right economy of scale of having two units. But in terms of go-to-market,
it makes sense to make sure that we actually do that as two separate entities. In terms of Brexit, it's a difficult one to call in terms of, you know, whether Brexit will have an impact on the business. The macroeconomic thing, we've not seen significant position on us. We have seen some stalling of business, we think, of people's confidence. But actually, most of it has come through, and we saw that in some of the trading. We definitely saw early in the year, in the maps business, a movement of business from Q1 to Q2 to Q2, but actually we didn't lose it, and it came in. We are concerned in terms of, you know, if there was any macroeconomic effect, then obviously confidence is a really important part in the B2B market. Competitors, actually, you saw the breadth of this business. We have different competitors in different segments. You know, if you look at those businesses in terms of where they are, competitors are in revenue, you go in terms of total telecom spend, it's us, then Voda, then O2, then Virgin and Daisy. That's where you see it. Actually, there's a long tail, though. It's a very competitive market with many, many players, but a lot of them are playing in little segments of the market. So in terms of the big picture, it's pretty obvious who the competitors are. In terms of little segments, we actually need to make sure we're aware of more players than that.
Thanks very much. It's John Carillis from Numis. I've got three questions, please. So firstly, the proportion of enterprise broadband customers that take FTTC is actually less than the equivalent number for consumer, and that sounds counterintuitive to me, so I don't know if you can help me understand why. Secondly, I think you emphasize the fact that the headwind to voice is time limited, but you have a 5-year plan. It sort of feels that the pressure on voice might actually last 5 years, or are you implying something different? Or what I'm trying to figure out is, will it be year 2 or year 5 or year 6 that you start growing on a net basis? And I'm sure you won't answer that, but if you can talk around that would be good. And then lastly, some of your frenemies have sort of wondered how you might deal with conflicts of interest between wholesale and being their competitors on the retail side. Maybe you can talk to that as well, please.
Yep, can you deal with those? Why don't I kick off in the mall? Damien, if you want to jump in on any of these, do, and Steve also could say, let me know. Let's take the first one. Broadband, FTTC, it's quite simple, actually. The addressable market for FTTC in business is smaller than consumer. Businesses tend to be in slightly different places to where the mass rollout, so you get a slightly lower percentage available to you, and therefore the addressable market's less. So you will end up with more businesses being copper-only than consumer. That's the mix on that. The voice decline, you know, I think what we're looking at is an increasing percentage on a number. So the number will diminish, the absolute will diminish, but you're absolutely right, there will still be a tail, and it might even be diminishing at a percentage, but the absolute number each year will diminish as we get an increasing percentage against it. I think we see that as coming down to a tail, but difficult, as I said in the earlier question, difficult to be absolute about where that goes. We do expect the decline to be continuing over the 5 years, just the scale of it, and our numbers will diminish. A conflict of interest. There's always a common question, actually. We have a wholesale division, and we keep it separate. So commercially, it's entirely separate. So we'll utilize the capabilities of the business. But anything that we do commercially is kept within that unit. It has its own support model commercially, and whilst we will look at market pricing and guide into that about what margins they can go for, we don't allow any transfer of information. So the Chinese walls between the two units. In terms of what we do in terms of product, as I said at the start, we see wholesale as being a very useful deliverer of economy of scale for us in terms of our network. It helps fund our network, and our network is a big differentiator for us. So the investment we can put in there. What we don't do is we don't give a brand, and we don't give differentiating products into the wholesale market. If something differentiates us, then we'll keep it in the retail business. If it's somebody out there selling it in the wholesale market, then we'll fulfill it.
Just one tiny little thing, please. FTC coverage is now 95% plus of the country. Could there be another reason why the FTC take-up within enterprise is lower?
The business percentage is quite a bit lower than that in terms of coverage.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll come back over here and then I'll come back to come over that side. This is the back.
I'm Lisa Berendt from Point Topic. Looking at the IT cloud security, which those areas you obviously want to grow, you've been quite dependent on partners in those areas, so Cisco, Avaya, BroadSoft, etc. Can you just tell us a little bit about the structure of those partnerships and the arrangements, you know, that you're looking at contract share or putting in equipment from those suppliers and software where you just buy them outright, etc. And also, how vulnerable are you to those suppliers perhaps going off with someone else in the future?
Okay, two things, and I'll hand over to Steve to talk a little bit more in the detail of this. I don't think the security market's homogenous, so in terms of what we're doing small and what we do, and Chris talked on some of this at the top end. We absolutely use third-party products within security, and we would see that as being an important go-to-market position. What we do utilize, and if you look at the Meraki product, is actually it's not about just the Meraki product having some security and portals within it. It's about how we integrate that. So at the top end, then actually we continue to use, as Chris alluded, there are some third-party products in the solution, but there's a whole wrap around that solution in terms of expertise and support models. So it's not one thing or the other. Do you want to add anything to that?
Steve Best, I run the product portfolio and enterprise. So I think we've got some strong partnerships in place, and that's clear. And I think the strength that we've got as a partnership in this instance is makes us greater than a two parts, if you like. If you think about Cisco and our ability to sell those Cisco capabilities with an integrated network, especially when we look at the SD-WAN type product. That's a real strength. As Cisco clearly see us as bringing a significant amount to this team, because we can be a single point of contact. We can provide, as Damien talked about, that lead to cash process is fully integrated, not just with the network, but also with the security services. I guess the other point I'd say, we are not entirely dependent on partners at all. At the top end, given where we've been and our focus, we've been focused very much on protecting BT's network. We've been focused on protecting the UK internet infrastructure, and we have also been focused on protecting our customers' data. And when you've been doing that for a long period of time, that gives us a lot of strength and expertise and infrastructure with security operational centers around the world that allows us to provide BT-owned solutions. And certainly, at the top end of our market, we provide some very bespoke security solutions, which are clearly dependent on our own capabilities. And our aim, as Chris mentioned, is to take that expertise and bench strength and take it down through the market so that we can sell it in a more commoditized fashion and get strength in the marketplace that way. So I think that's
good. We'll go back over here. Sean? Please.
Thank you, Jerry. Sean Collins from CCS Insight. Two related questions. The first one is, given the multi-brand portfolio you have, which brands are you going to launch 5G on? And second of all, you've talked about premium to something. when you say premium for 5G, I think you were talking about, Tim, premium to what? Premium to your broadband? Premium to your fixed broadband? Premium to your copper broadband? Premium to your voice? Premium to your mobile tariffs? Where does it fit in?
You mean specifically on 5G?
Specifically on 5G.
Yeah, okay. Well, we did announce what we're going to do on 5G, and we will launch first on EE, and we do sell, Chris alluded to this, we do sell EE. We have, certainly in the Sydney area, we have a lot of customers who come to the retail store and so on, so we do sell EE products. We have a lot of mobile-only customers, and where we do that, typically, we've seen them as EE. So we will follow on the EE launch on EE. However, we also have a growing base of BT mobile customers, and we will follow that up with a BT launch as well. So that's something we have already announced. And like consumer, when we launch in the mobile-only position, we will do 5G with the premium on terms of the pricing that we both
compared to 4G?
Sorry, yeah. Yeah.
Or is there going to be a premium if you're using it as a substitute for your existing broadband offering? Would that
we
be
haven't announced any position on that in terms of things, so we're specifically talking about the mobile part.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you, James Rex from the Street Research. Two questions, please. The first one was just regarding the public sector business. I think the kind of loss of contract there took people a bit by surprise. Are we now completely through that process? And if so, do you actually think there could be an opportunity to win some of those back? And thinking about your contract exposure across the business, I mean, your top 10 contracts across BT Enterprise, what percentage of revenue do those make up? And then second area, just going back to the point around FTTC coverage, which I'm interested in, can you help us think about the exposure of customers who take leased lines at the moment today because they're in exchanges where FTTC is not available? And I speak as a customer who's exposed to that at the moment myself in our business. What's the risk in particular dark fiber might be rolled out, you know, that customers can cut their bills quite substantially when an FTTC option is available?
Okay. I'll ask Colin to speak, who runs a major in public sector, to talk, give you a bit more flavour on public sector. We won't break down the revenues of the contracts. You won't be surprised. There's no doubt that, and let me take the last piece and then I'll hand over to Colin. There's no doubt that as it's the same position I suppose earlier, that as all nets roll out and fibre becomes more pervasive, the people will have more choices. What we're seeing at the moment, and as I said earlier, what we see is that actually Openreach is the choice, and as that rolls out. And now, if other altnets came and our customers only had an altnet as an option, then we wouldn't rule out using altnets to support our base. But at the moment, we see the majority of where we see that development comes through Openreach for us. Do you want to just...
group is incentivized at a group level not to deploy FTTC in certain exchanges where you can then make more money as a group from leased line services from FTTC?
So that's not a question?
Well, maybe it's more one for BT group level.
It's not something I believe we do at all, actually. But thank you.
Just with respect to the public sector business, and the challenge that we originally had was six contracts that were either lost or ceasing, and that caused the issue. Two of those remain in a runoff period that's probably gone on a little longer than we and government would have expected. But we're performing well in those, and we would expect to hold a position in those contracts moving forward. In public sector in general, I think we put a lot of effort into improving our Net Promoter Score and customer experience in general across that sector. We've made a lot of progress on that, and that's certainly, it's improved relationships, improved contract renewal rates, and improved the pipeline in that business. And although through a structural change in public sector, those mega contracts that would have been let in the late 90s, early 2000s, there's not going to be a return to those. us competing and winning in the new reality of public sector. I think we're performing reasonably well in that respect.
Did you want to say something, Steve?
Just on the FTTC piece, we're clearly driving it very hard to get a higher penetration of FTTC into the business market because it's a product that we sell and it fulfills a significant market need. We also see a significant differential between the types of products that you're referring to. So Ethernet-based products, they are different in nature to essentially broadband-based products. They're symmetrical in nature, which is more aligned to business connectivity. And they have, you know, different service characteristics as well in terms of the speed of response that you get from a Ethernet-based service compared to a broadband service. So, you know, we see FTTC as a key part of the portfolio and ultra-fast as well, and we want to drive it into the portfolio, but we see a significant gap between these two products and the needs that our customers need for particular applications.
Nick McGuire from CCS Insight. First of all, thank you very much, all of you, for your presentations. Really interesting. I'll only ask one question, if I may, and it's regarding a lot of the internal innovation that exists across BT. And I think you mentioned earlier about some of the IoT technologies that you're externalizing. I'm just curious what areas are really exciting internally that you're thinking about in terms of externalizing. I mean, there are certain technologies I've seen from the field force automation practice, for example. They're doing things with, you know, mixed reality and wearables, as well as you know, digital assistants and things of that nature. So I'm just curious, from your point of view, what you see from the internal side that can be externalized.
Thanks. Yes, you run the IoT group position. Do you want to?
Yeah, I mean, IoT, there's lots of examples of how we're deploying technologies internally that we're looking to take out into the market. And a lot of that focuses around asset intelligence, so being able for us internally to track where our assets are and how they're behaving. But some of it also focuses on some richer use cases around video analytics, around building in-building solutions, particularly looking at how IoT solutions can make the lives of our workforce more comfortable and more productive. And that's really the focus for IoT.
John Delaney, IDC. Chris, you're in fact leading on from the previous question, as it turns out. You talked about low-power wide area connectivity for IoT in your presentation. You referred to LoRa and to NB-IoT. Now, the only thing I'm aware of that BT has done there is the LoRa base station on BT Tower. So my question is, firstly, have I missed something? And secondly, if you can talk a bit about your plans for further rollout of those technologies.
So we believe that LoRaWAN and NB-IoT can coexist. In fact, we've got the LoRaWAN products we sell in the market today, but we're not doing that through a nationwide rollout. What we actually do is deploy it locally with specific customers to meet specific local needs, and it's really suited to campuses and factories, etc. So that's where we're focusing on LoRaWAN. Obviously, as a cellular provider, NB-IoT is extremely interesting to us and in many ways provides a stepping stone into the low-power capability we'll get with 5G. We've not made any announcements on NB-IoT at the moment, but we are trialing it in our labs and we'll be making some conclusions on that over the course of this year.
Thank you. It's Robert Grindle from Deutsche Bank. First question is, how far through the journey are you in cross-selling mobile to your fixed customers in enterprise as compared to as envisioned when you were bought EE in the first place? Have you reached your natural market share in enterprise mobile yet? And secondly, you've talked about fixed IP voice declining. I'd like to ask about the impact on your line volumes when all IP is introduced. I suppose it's towards the end of your planning period. Some other operators in Europe have lost quite a few lines on the migration. Have you studied the amount of wastage in that event? Thank you.
Yep. Hey, why don't I take the first one, Steve? Do you mind picking up the second question? And in terms of the generally with with mobile. I think we alluded to this actually. We don't believe we've reached our market share, I won't comment on whether it's a met our ambition, but I would say I've got a greater ambition than where we are. We have 30% market share. We've still got a lot of customers who are fixed only, we see that as opportunity to sell further mobile into. And given the scale of a network quality differentiation we have, we think there's further opportunity there for us to do that.
Just on the lines, what we're trying to do is make sure that we've got a IP voice product and proposition in each of the markets to meet our particular channel requirements. And we've been pretty successful in that space. I guess there's one area where we are continuing to invest, and as you may know, Openreach are actually coming out with a new product which replaces the kind of legacy line rental capability, coming out with something called Sagir. When that's available, we will go live with that at the low end of the marketplace, so at the low end of the SME sector, and that will give us the ability to sell integrated IP access with integrated voice. And I guess that's the remaining key enabler in this marketplace. So as we bring new propositions to market, clearly in that particular segment, we see legacy to IP voice migration as we kind of innovate our customers from one side to the other. That's the remaining component. When that gets in place at that bottom end, it will be a lot easier for our customers to move from PBM to IP. And a lot of our investment, as you've heard earlier today, about customer experience is going to make sure that that's an easy journey for our customers. And that will be a launch that we will be talking to the market about later in the year.
Damien, do you want to ask
something? In terms of thinking about the dynamics between lines moving to IP speeds, quite an important one is that if you take ISDN 30, for example, you might have a business with, let's say, 20 employees. They might have ISDN 30 going into the switch. They might only have 10 channels being used. We'll charge them for each of those 10 channels. And when they move to IP, they might decide just to buy, again, 10 IP seats, or they might decide that actually they might as well get 20 IP seats for each one of their employees. IP, when you look at our pricing, it's generally priced a bit cheaper than traditional. But it's quite hard to kind of, there's no one size that fits all in terms of lines going to seats, particularly when you need to think about the channels going to seats.
Go to the back, please, and we'll come back to the middle here.
Yeah, thank you. It's Paul Sidney, Credit Suisse. Just a couple of quick questions, please. For Damien first, you mentioned your ambitions in terms of growth. Could you just clarify, is that revenue growth, EBITDA growth, sustainable free cash flow growth, all three? And the second question, just following up from Polo's question, in terms of the different outcomes regarding Brexit, how do you think those different outcomes would affect your business? That's looking both good and bad.
You want to say the first one?
Yeah, in terms of the first one, ultimately, as a management team, we have an ambition to grow our business, and ultimately, that's got to be top line growth at some point in the future. And one can drive EBITDA growth or bottom line growth through cutting costs, but long term, in terms of building a sustainable business, our ambition is more about top line growth. Just
won't
say exactly when.
Yeah, on Brexit, I think let me add a couple of things to what I said earlier. We're a UK business, so we're not massively impacted by the international dynamic of that in terms of our trading. However, of course, a lot of our kit is imported, so if there was issues in terms of that, we've got a number of mitigation strategies in play at the moment to make sure that we could deal with some of the scenarios that are out there, but any long-term disruption to that would obviously affect the business. But in terms of trading, we're UK-based, so I think the dynamic there is really, as I said earlier, the fear we'd have is a macroeconomic dynamic in terms of confidence. That's the thing that, so just being able to get imports or to macroeconomic effects, those are the two things that I worry about.
The economy gets better or worse.
Yeah.
Hello, it's John Davis from Bloomberg Intelligence.
Just a quick question on the ESN. Have the kind of very protracted rollout of that had any impact on your relationship and ability to sell other things into the sort of wider security services, stroke police ICT, or are they willing to sort of cut you some slack because there's obviously some element of delay on the tech arriving into your business?
Yeah, let me say a couple of things on that. I mean, in terms of the ESN obligations that we have, what we're delivering is network, not the technology, and we're on plan. So I don't think there's been any play across in terms of what we've done. The relationship is strong. In fact, in some of the trading, you've seen that we announced some good wins in the police force over the last quarter. We have about 40% of the police forces today. You know, ESN's not ready for rollout, but there is plans in place now. But the network strength is there, the underlying network's there, and we talk about that, obviously, in terms of the relationships that we have in that sector. But we really, there hasn't been any play across from the delays in the program and our relationships with any of the emergency service organizations that we're working with on a day-to-day trading basis at all. Go to the back.
Thanks very much. Nick Delphas from Redburn. So you've been very frank about the challenges from voice. On SD-WAN, though, could you talk us through in a bit more detail why you don't see that as stationary? Because obviously, in principle, it should be. People can use your network in lots of different ways without paying you for the networking side as they do previously.
Yeah, one of the most common questions we get. Steve, do you want to talk about this?
I think when we first started talking about SD-WAN as a proposition in the marketplace, there was a view that basically the market would move from layer 3 VPN to the internet, and that people like us would see a significant erosion in our business. What we're seeing right now is not bad at all. I think it was 3 weeks ago we had 50 of our largest customers here where we had them for a day to talk through their plans on how they were going to exploit the flexibility of SD-WAN as we brought it to market. What we're seeing is that those customers are demanding a kind of hybrid network, so they are still going to utilize the internet, but they're going to utilize it to give them more and more flexibility and a cost-effective mechanism for bursting bandwidth. But they have got so many mission-critical applications that they are moving out of their buildings and into the cloud, that they are entirely dependent on getting access and reliable access to those applications. So lots of mission-critical applications, they want to get guaranteed the service in exactly the same way as they always have as the traditional MPLS market grew and then matured. So that's not changing. What is changing is we can provide them a software layer that allows them to manage applications on a case-by-case basis, give them real-time views as to how they're performing, and then allow them to use the internet where they need to burst, where they need to get access to things that are not security sensitive. And so the secret of SD-WAN is allowing them to get a lot more flexibility and help them grow and flex their business. And that's certainly the feedback we got from them at the end of the day. It just gives more flexibility, basically, in a kind of hybrid world, and they're still going to be looking for us to give guarantees on really high-quality, dependable, and reliable networks. And critically, with security end-to-end. So out to the data center, providing security back to the premise, and then out to the device as well. So it's a great opportunity. And we've talked about the opportunity to cross-sell. SD-WAN, as Chris mentioned in his presentation, is a really great kind of beachhead for us to talk about customers, not only just about connectivity, but those on-premise solutions as well, and then how we hook up and provide security to their mobile workforce.
Okay.
Thanks.
Two follow-up questions, please. James Rapps from New Street Research. So the first one's just interested to think about how you think about the impact of the BCMR on your business overall. And it seems like the whole business market has faced
6 years of wholesale prices coming down, and the new BCMR seems to indicate a more stable pricing outlook. Does that mean that should feed through directly into just more stable revenue outlook for BT Enterprise? And then the second question was just around your margins versus those of BT Consumer. It'd be interesting how you think about the different market structures. Both of you rely on open reach, both of you are in competitive markets, yet you've got a 31% margin, Consumer is at 23%. Why do you think that difference exists today?
Yeah, let me take both of those and then anybody can jump in. In terms of price regulation in the market, we certainly see it in the wholesale market, which flows into the retail market. The market has been pretty adroit at following the prices. And so we see that moving. We've always seen that moving pretty fast, sometimes preempting the price reduction. So I think if you pull it forward and there's more stability in the pricing, we think the market would be more stable. But we'll wait and see. In terms of the margins, I think the big difference that I would call out is that because we share the same quality products and network and brand, but the point I made earlier in terms of price sensitivity, I think there's a small part of our market that is driven by price, but they're more driven by value. When we speak to with customers in the B2B space, they're interested in network. They're interested in the reliability that it provides their business. And whilst price is always going to be the negotiation, they're looking for value. That's the difference between consumer. They're a much higher percentage of their base will be looking at price. And we see that in the low end of our market. So that's clear. I think we have time for maybe one more question, if there's any. Go back to it.
Alexander Harold from Oval again. What strategy do you intend to adopt in the event that someone does a major launch for fixed wireless access, targeting those customers, those business customers you can't reach with FTTC?
I think the, as we alluded to in the 5G position, we see 5G has been an opportunity for us to offer fixed wireless access. So, it would be part of the product set that will be in the market when 5G is launched. And one of the things that we believe in that what we do in the networks is very much about being first and best. And that's our plan for 5G as well. So whilst there will be competition out there using 5G, we see that. We will also compete with it. In the B2B space, certainly 5G has a relevance. And certainly the fixed wireless access could be a competitive threat to broadband, but I think in terms of the larger part of the market where people are looking for, as Steve said, symmetric products of really high bandwidth, I think they probably will still, certainly in the short term, be looking as Ethernet as being the basis of that connectivity. I'm afraid we've run out of time, so I'm going to close there, but thank you very much for your time. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully that's given you some insight into the enterprise. Thank you very much.